This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. Baby oil so deep at a freak off, it causes two slip and falls. Just hold that mental image. This as Diddy bringing a book into court so he can manifest a verdict. Okay, good luck with that. This as Juror 6 gets the boot. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us.
He abused everybody on every level. A lot of them have never come forward. They'd rather just disappear, forget about it. They're too scared. Diddy was menacing, threatening, intimidating.
She talked about how he was violent, he was threatening.
They are terrified of him.
Oh my God, that is absolutely inhumane, inexcusable treatment of another human being.
Straight out to the Monahan Federal Courthouse where Sean Combs, aka Diddy, facing a multi-count federal indictment including RICO and sex trafficking. Standing by outside the courthouse is investigative reporter and host of Tisa Tells on YouTube. Tisa Tells. Tisa, thank you for being with us. A lot happening in court today. Let's just kick it off. Pardon the pun, with juror number 6 getting kicked off, booted off the jury. What happened?
So we went into the courtroom and it was solemn. Oddly enough, Diddy came in with a smile on his face like he had just won the golden ticket from Willy Wonka. However, that smile disappeared when the judge actually laid out in a very surgical, precise manner exactly why he wasn't getting his dream. However, there was another shock upset where after he dismissed juror number 6, and we'll get into that, he actually said there is a second juror that is up on the line for possible dismissal, and he invited both sides to write a list of questions so they can question a juror and see if the new juror will actually be allowed to stay too. So a lot was going on in the court today.
Okay, Tisa Tells, remind us all how many alternates we've got in the hopper.
So right now we have officially 5 alternates. It started a classic set, you know, a juror's dozen, and then there were 6 alternates. Now that one man has moved in to the place of juror number 6, there are 5 alternates left. And with the second juror, if there's less, it looks like we might be down to 4 alternates.
Tisa Tells, did the court acknowledge who the next juror that may get the boot is? Which juror is it?
So the court didn't give any identifying information except for the fact, and this goes into the judge giving such a hard line. As you saw the judge laying out, Diddy's face just looked like a very, very bad day. Shoulders started falling. He started looking angrily at his lawyers. All the judge did say is that this juror in question actually approached the court and said, hey, I don't know what's going on. Just wanted to be candid with you. That seems to be the magic word of the hour. I want to be candid with you. And because of that candor, the judge is now taking that to advisement. But they haven't given any identifying information, and they are trying to keep this under wraps.
Okay, let me understand what you just said. Tisa Tells joining us outside the Monahan Federal Courthouse. Tisa, number one, juror 6, gone, out of there, booted. We'll get into why in just a moment. And of course, it's the ground for another motion of mistrial by Sean Combs' defense team. Is it valid? No. But, you know, you never know if you get one wacko appellate judge, what might go wrong with that. That said, now another juror is in jeopardy. Now, are you telling me that the second questionable juror approach the court themselves?
Yes, that is what my sources are telling me, that the second juror actually approached the court themselves, showed that candor that everybody is, that's the magic word, showed that candor, and the judge invited both sides to say, listen, write your list of questions for the jurors and for the juror, and later on, we will ask those questions. Again, they're being super tight-lipped. They're probably going to clear the courtroom, but as of now, we were shocked, and Diddy was shocked, too, that there was the second juror. Literally, when he said the second juror in question, Diddy had a look like what is going on and was looking at his defense team furiously. After that, the jurors hadn't been bought in yet. They were in huddles, just the defense team. The prosecution, cool and calm, sitting there going over their notes on how they're going to destroy Diddy today, and the defense team was in crisis meltdown mode.
Okay, hold on just a moment. Joining me at the courthouse is Tisa Tales. Straight out to Sydney, Sunroo joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter, also covering the courthouse. Sydney, have you been able to speculate yet which juror, the second juror in jeopardy, may be?
Nancy, we don't know, but it surprises me that Combs was so shocked by this. And that can mean a number of things, but we know that behind bars, he was actively trying to sway the jury a little bit. He's getting all of his kids to participate in these PR campaigns to make him look like a loving father and not the man that the government is making him out to be.
Or, you know, again, when you don't know a horse, look at his track record. We know, and Sydney and Tisha, jump in if you need to. We know that apparently Sean Combs has tried to influence witnesses from behind bars and has been reprimanded about that. Would he go so far as to try and contact a juror? Joining me, veteran trial lawyer Troy Slayton, criminal defense attorney out of L.A. at Slayton Lawyers. Troy, that will take the cake. If this juror is approaching the judge saying, "Somebody contacted me over the weekend," I find it really interesting that this is happening on a Monday, right? What, if anything, happened over the weekend to shake this juror into approaching the bench with a problem? What about it? What else could have happened over the weekend?
It could be any number of things, Nancy, and it looks like all the jurors have the fear of God in them because one juror has been dismissed. And if it's found that that juror who was dismissed actually lied during the voir dire process, which is the jury questioning, you know, let the truth come out. That's what the Latin phrase means, Nancy, as you know, then all the jurors could be really fearful and thinking about, geez, did I say anything wrong? Did I make a mistake during voir dire? But this is a great opportunity for the defense to get a mistrial, because if Diddy's attorneys can show that a juror is being dismissed for a racial reason, then they're going to make what's called a Batson motion to get a whole new trial, which would mean that everything that they've seen so far is just a preview.
This is what we're hearing. We are hearing that this juror, I'm calling it juror, the second juror, okay? Juror six is gone. That's over with. And we're going to go into why, because now it's an issue for a mistrial, right? Is it valid?
That's right.
No, it's not valid. The judge did the right thing. And I think even you, Troy Slayton, are going to agree with me on this. But that's it. And remember, keeping in mind, Troy, as you know already, you're a veteran trial lawyer, the appellate team is going to be a completely different team than the trial lawyers. Typically, that's true, right? One of the reasons, and the trial lawyers know this, is because the appellate team, if there's a conviction, it's going to be appealed, of course. The appellate team will claim, right or wrong, that the trial lawyers were ineffective, that they did this wrong, they did that wrong. And that is SOP, standard operating procedure. Every defense attorney knows if there's a conviction, they're going to be accused of ineffective assistance of counsel on appeal. Why? They're willing to undergo that to help their client get a reversal. It's part of the fee, let me just say. So my point is, a new appellate team would be handling this on appeal so they can attack the trial team saying, they should have let this juror be thrown off. This wasn't right. We demand a new trial. Now, as to juror number two, Troy, listen to this. This is what I'm learning. Let me say the second juror, all right? I don't know the juror number attached to the juror. The juror approached the judge. The judge has asked to see the juror's phone. The phone was handed over and is going to be examined. We understand the second questionable juror was questioned over a conversation he may have had with a colleague. Okay, let's interpret that, because, you know, Troy, have you ever run out of alternates? I have not. And the reason is I typically would pick at least six alternates for a trial. But for a long-lasting trial that's going to be over 3 weeks, you need a stable of alternates because anything could go wrong. I have had jurors drop out. Have you?
I've had jurors drop out. I've had jurors get kicked out. I've had jurors get sick, but I've never run out of jurors. We've gone down to zero alternates before in a jury trial, but I've never had a mistrial because of a lack of jurors. But it can happen. But I know that Diddy's attorneys
are going to
say...
It can happen. I've had jurors on a couple of cases get off because, one, a husband had a heart attack. She had to go. Two, another juror was having chest pains. They had to go. And something about child care. It wasn't critical, but the woman was so upset about... Not sure if she had childcare for the next day. I didn't think she could focus, and I really liked her. But she was so distracted and upset about her childcare situation, we cut her loose. Those are just the ones I remember off the top of my head. And I don't like going to an alternate because I like my 12 that I picked. But you got to do what you got to do. But here, I think they should have had more than 6 alternates. But that said, this is where we are right now. And to Dr. Bethany Marshall joining us, a renowned psychoanalyst out of the Beverly Hills jurisdiction, author of Deal Breakers. You can see her now on Peacock and find her at drbethanymarshall.com. Dr. Bethany, here's the thing. Did you hear Tisa tells, you know what, let me go back for a refresher. Then I'll tee it up for you again, Bethany. Tisa tells you stated that in the midst of juror number 6 potentially getting kicked off, Sean Combs came into the courtroom looking all happy.
Happy, ecstatic. There were smiles everywhere. And I literally said, what are they telling Diddy? Because even though yourself and a lot of legal professionals are saying there is no way in hell a mistrial is happening, he always seemed happy. But today he was almost on his tippy toes floating into court with an air of happiness. Again, he had, I think, 2 motions for a mistrial. He had the juror number 6. I think he thought he had the deck stacked. But again, justice is the house that he's playing against. And they literally had... They call it blackjack. So it was a lot going on, but I've never seen somebody that happy for motions that were just on smoke and air. It was very odd to see.
Yeah, especially when the motions are against him. The tide is against him on these motions. So Dr. Bethany, he's happy. Why? Does he know something we don't know? I would not put it past him. Strictly based on the fact that we believe he was trying to dissuade witnesses from coming forward, and we know that for a fact, do you think that anybody has gotten to a juror?
Well, you know, Nancy, he's manifesting a not guilty verdict. So, of course, he's happy because his prayers have worked. I mean, seriously, P. Diddy has such a vast network. We would have to have an org chart to try to figure out who he's gotten in touch with. It's probably multiple people. But, you know, Nancy, 2 words come to mind. Becky Hill. Remember that? The Colton County clerk who wrote a book about the Murdoch trial. And then after she wrote the book, she realized she could get in trouble for it. So there's also the possibility that the juror number 2 realized that he or she had done things that they would get in trouble for if it came to light. So they had to turn themselves in after juror number 6 was dismissed.
So Sydney Sumner joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter, juror 6 was booted because he lives outside the jurisdiction. That is reversible error. For instance, let's just pretend you, Sydney, are being tried for murder. We can't fly somebody in from Utah to be on your jury. That is the law. The jurors must reside in the jurisdiction where the case is being tried. Get it? Now, if it's a state case, such as, you know, murder, rape, child molestation, the juror must come from that county. In a federal trial, this is a district. It encompasses several counties within the district, the federal district. However, that's in New York. This juror is residing in New Jersey. That is not in the jurisdiction. Is that right, Sydney? Is that why the juror was booted?
That's exactly why the juror was booted, Nancy. But further than that, he also was not candid, again, that word of the day, when he was questioned and pressed on this issue. So he first answered that he lived in the Bronx and he lived there with his aunt and occasionally spent time in New Jersey with his girlfriend and his daughter. Then when he was casually talking about this with court staff, he was like, oh, actually, I really live in New Jersey. I don't spend that much time in the Bronx. And when he was questioned by the judge later, he said, oh, no. I wasn't telling the truth when I said that. So he flips back and forth on his answers pretty frequently. And he did admit in his initial questioning that he was a fan of 90s hip hop. So the judge was led to believe that this juror had a reason to want to stay on this jury. And the issue of his actual residence became lesser to the fact that he lied about it multiple times.
The court learned today that juror number 6 was less than truthful about his address when the jury was impaneled. While the juror answered truthfully that he lived in the Bronx on his original questionnaire, in the last 2 weeks he moved out of the court's jurisdiction. The juror brought up his move in friendly conversation with court staff, but they later realized the possible ramifications of his admission and reported it. The judge initially believed the juror may have had a perfectly innocent explanation for the lapse in judgment, but at the end of the court day, ultimately decided to dismiss the juror.
Joining us now outside the Monahan Courthouse in downtown Manhattan, Lauren Conlon, star of Pop Crime TV on YouTube. Lauren, thank you for being with us. Lauren, I understand that there was so much baby oil at a freak-off. We have already heard about two slip and falls. Listen, Lauren.
Jonathan Perez is Sean Combs' fourth assistant to take the stand with immunity. Perez testifies that he worked directly under Christina Corum, who instructed him on setting up King Nights, which Corum described as Combs' private time with a woman. Perez says the task was usually left to the night staff, and he only set up for about five of these nights. Perez even had to purchase lingerie for Jane for the King Nights. Perez says he cleaned up the messy rooms afterward, and they were often covered in oil. Replying to Corum about how a cleanup was going, Perez texted, "Slipped and fell twice already." Perez says Combs also sent him to pick up drugs.
Okay. Objection. Ew. What happened? The guys had two slip and falls in all the oil?
Yes, unfortunately, that is what we saw in evidence when we saw these text messages between Christina Corum and Jonathan Perez, one of Diddy's assistants. We also saw a text message from Christina Corum to Jane, actually, stating that the rooms that she and Diddy would use, there always would be extra damage charges because they were all white and more oil spilled than normal. So it's been a bit stomach-turning, Nancy.
Joining us now outside the Monahan Courthouse is Tisa Tells. Tisa, I understand that Sean Combs has been, first of all, he tried the Bible. Okay, then I guess his lawyers told him, that's not a good idea. You need to stop that right now. Reading the Bible in front of the jury. Now, if he had any history of ever going to church or reading the Bible in the past, it might not have been a bad move. But using the Bible as a prop, I'm surprised he wasn't struck by a bolt of lightning. That said, now he's got a new book he's bringing into court, The Magic of Believing. Now, if I'm right, that's all about manifesting your truth, like manifesting a not guilty. Is this real?
It is actually real. He has some sort of manifestation book. But again, with each week, at this point, I think he's going to bring in a guide to the dark arts from Hogwarts if we let him keep going. He is sliding down the walls. And the thing is, he keeps trying to bring in these props. To me, the Bible, perfect prop for him, okay? Like you said, you're about to have thunder and lightning in the courtroom. Now he's all about manifesting. He's trying to remind us of the brainwashing he gave the nation for the last 10 years and bring that in. But at this point, it's turned into a joke, which makes me believe how much is our legal team actually monitoring social media? Because this has turned into a joke. Again, what is he going to bring in? What is he going to bring in next? How to make friends and win enemies? I mean, no one really knows what's going on. So again, Diddy is trying his best to turn this into a circus, but the judge has a firm hold on the courtroom and he's letting it know this is going to be above board. So he's struggling. He's definitely struggling.
Sean Combs in the courtroom manifesting a not guilty verdict. Listen.
Is Sean Diddy Combs trying to manifest a not guilty verdict? The music mogul has been spotted carrying a self-help book, The Magic of Believing, back and forth to court. Legal experts say it isn't uncommon for defendants to turn to some sort of coping mechanism during lengthy and stressful trials, and Combs' book of choice is used by many for mental fortitude in challenging situations.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Legal experts say it isn't uncommon for defendants to turn to some sort of coping mechanism during lengthy and stressful trials, and Combs' book of choice is used by many for mental fortitude in challenging situations.
Dr. Bethany, manifesting. For those of us that aren't really familiar with that, could you explain what it is? Is it like, wish it and it comes true?
Like I dream of Jeannie? You know, manifesting is this idea that if you form a thought in your mind, you can materialize it in the environment. So let's say you want to be an actress. You meditate and you imagine yourself being in front of the camera, being happy, enjoying being, you know, getting your next Oscar. And that if you can summon up enough feelings about that event, then you can rearrange sort of what's going on in the environment to make that event happen. I mean, whether or not this is true, okay? So P. Diddy controls
his
victims.
Did you actually just say whether or not this is true?
Okay, whether I
did
just
you say
okay.
that? Because I think you did. It's not true. How about going to school and getting a job to advance your goal? What about, what are you? Okay, please tell me you don't tell your clients to manifest.
Okay, so Nancy,
sit there and wish it and it will happen.
Okay. So just like P. Diddy tries to control his victims, I think he's trying to control God. I mean, it's like he's trying to go to the universe get his wishes met.
Bethany, please, unless we really need to drag God into this, let's please leave him, her out of it. Just first of all, you evaded the question. Do you tell your clients to manifest?
I do not, but many of my Beverly Hills clients come in with a goal they're trying to manifest. So I try to turn it into real life, you know, actualization, meaning acting on their own behalf to reach the goal. You know, Nancy.
Okay,
the
now definition... you're losing me. You're totally losing me in all the words. Okay, thank goodness you don't tell your clients to manifest. Okay, Lynn Shaw joining me, founder, director, Lynn's Warriors, a nonprofit, which means a lot. She's not in it for the money, dedicated to ending sex exploitation and trafficking of women and girls. I bet they wish the victims that they could manifest this thing never happened, that they were not raped. According to the state, they were, and videoed, and then blackmailed with the videos. I left out the drugging part, and drugged.
Yeah, Nancy, well, I have news for everybody, because I manifest with victims and survivors of sex trafficking, rape, abuse. I actually tell them, think positive thoughts. Stay in this lane with positivity. Think how you want it to look. So I'm manifesting left and right all over New York City and across our country. You know what? We're losing sight of while all this is going on, and it's very important what's happening week six. But you know what? We're not talking about alleged victims, alleged survivors of this smug, thug, triple D, dirty ditty degenerate running amok in my hometown for years. It's very concerning when we hear from Tisa, you know, that he comes in so positive into the courtroom and all of this attention is being put on that. What does he know? Because I'll tell you what. He, for decades in New York City, has been getting away with everything. It's very concerning to me that this is happening. What about, we're not talking at all about these alleged victims, survivors. Where are more of them? I want to see more of them on the stand. There's lots of people complicit here. Why aren't we hearing from them? So it remains to be seen. But I leave you with this. Yes, with anybody who's been attacked or is down in the dumps, is depressed, is even suicidal, I actually tell them, manifest positive thoughts, stay positive, stay a warrior. And I use that technique all the time. And you know what? They get back to me. It seems to always help them a little bit. So that's a little bit positivity there. But as far as triple D, dirty ditty degenerate, We don't care at all about him and his manifestations and his Bibles. It's disgusting, and he's going down.
Let me speak to someone in law enforcement that maybe I can understand what they're saying. Jonathan Gilliam is joining me, former Navy SEAL. Let's start with that. FBI special agent, federal air marshal and police officer, author of Sheep No More, The Art of Awareness and Attack Survival, star of the Experts podcast, Jonathan Gilliam. Jonathan, I threw that question to Lynn Shaw, and I got an answer, but it was an evasive. You can go ahead and cut her mic right now. It was an evasive answer, Jonathan, because I asked about Sean Combs manifesting a not guilty verdict, and she responded that she has crime victims manifest positivity. Now, manifesting positivity, that's stay positive. I'm all for that. I'm all for expecting the best outcome, absolutely expecting it, and trying to make it happen, work to make it happen, but be prepared if it doesn't happen. Having a positive attitude is very different from manifesting a jury verdict or manifesting, conjuring up anything. The world doesn't work that way. Jonathan Gilliam, it boils down to, do the jurors believe the state's witnesses? The state's witnesses all underwent severe cross-examination. I'd like to hear you, out of all your years of taking cases to juries, tell me if you think the state has corroborated the victims well enough so far.
I don't think so. This, I'll tell you something, Nancy. From the very beginning of this and going back and looking at the way this case has gone forward, I think that when you look at what the prosecution is trying to prove and you look at how the witnesses come in and what they've testified to, it doesn't meet so far the threshold on a lot of the charges that they've brought up. And then when you look at this jury.
Okay, I need you to be specific.
Well, Gilliam, that's what I'm getting to. When you look at the jury
pool. What do you mean a lot of the charges have not been proven?
Well, racketeering, for instance. So far, we've not seen really any evidence of racketeering beyond Sean Diddy Combs himself running a very hostile work environment and engaging with prostitutes.
Oh, okay, hold on. Jonathan, have you been covering the testimony? Because we now have the fourth assistant be given immunity for completing illegal acts at the behest of Sean Combs. So when your employees are told by you to perform criminal acts to further a crime, that is RICO. Four witnesses so far given immunity. One obtained illegal drugs. One went with a gun to hunt down Suge Knight for a proposed attack on Knight. Others had transportation plans to bring in sex workers for an illegal act. Another accountant described sending an extortion email. And there's much, much more. A bodyguard went and physically dragged Cassie Ventura back for a freak-off. A bribe was conducted at the behest of Sean Combs. Those are crimes, and they further a criminal act. So explain to me how that is not racketeering.
Well, so usually, typically, when we look at the mafia and how racketeering has been used, it's by people who are not coerced into doing these things. And from what we've seen, the underlying motivation of most of these people is that they were coerced. They had pressure on them. They thought they would be ruined or fired. When they're making a tremendous amount of money, that pressure is on you also through the abuse. So I'm not saying that the reason I even brought that up was because when you hear the term manifestation, that this is going on and that continuously gets pushed out with these other things that you see in the media. Now you start to see as an investigator, not an attorney, as an investigator, I start looking at this. And when these jurors start having issues, I now start asking the question of, was there a game being played at the beginning of this to get jurors in there that may or may not have an issue?
Okay, see, you're making, let me just say, a stinky potpourri, because you have now thrown in a lot of issues to some point. My question to you is, why do you say racketeering has not been proven? And you said because it's usually used for the mob. You are familiar, I assume, with the Rampart. R, Robert. A, Alpha. M, Mother. P, Pony. A, Alpha. R, Robert. T, Toy. Rampart scandal, where the LAPD were prosecuted for RICO, for widespread corruption, because the head had the minions carry it out. So you don't have to be the mob to be the subject of a RICO prosecution.
Right. And that's
so
not
to
what
say,
I'm
well,
saying.
They're not the mob. That's not an excuse.
No, no. But what I'm saying, Nancy, is I'm trying to show the totality of circumstances of how the coercion was typically used to get people to do things that were violent or things that were nefarious in nature, such as moving prostitutes around.
They were paid.
And how that relates to this.
They were paid.
The coercion, coming in with the Bible, playing these pressure games in front of the jurors.
That has nothing to do with RICO. That's theatrics.
Agree. It's a game.
You are the crack pipe. That's my new name for you, crack pipe.
He looked like he was strung out, looked like a crackhead.
Or should I call you CP?
Gray gums, shaky hands, disgusting and decayed.
I love you, baby. You're my crack pipe. My husband called me a crack pipe. He would be in his own Dateline special. Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. We are at the Monahan Federal Courthouse bringing you the latest of today in the case against Sean Combs, a.k.a. Diddy. Straight out to Sidney Sumner, there was a surprise guest gracing the courtroom. Guess who? Listen.
I spent, like, all the money for the commercial on these new teeth. Once again, I had to shoot it on the iPhone. Go to Yeezy.com.
That from the official Yeezy page. Okay, Sidney Sumner, what does Kanye and his $1 million titanium teeth drool have to do with Sean Combs?
Well, Nancy, Kanye West has been one of the only public supporters of Diddy throughout this thing. And it's interesting because they weren't really close before this. Sean Combs and Kanye West kind of had a falling out over Kanye's White Lives Matter t-shirt line. And they haven't really been close since then. But now that Sean Combs is behind bars, Kanye West has apparently been reaching out to his sons and offering support. And we saw that devolve from pushing Sean John merchandise on his website to selling swastika t-shirts on his website in this tirade that kind of unfolded during Super Bowl week.
Oh, yes. Let's take a look at the swastika t-shirt. Brouhaha.
Within an hour of West's Super Bowl ad airing on TV, the only item available in his shop is a $20 short-sleeve white t-shirt with a swastika on it. The shirt is named HHO1. Many believe the letters stand for Heil Hitler. Critics and fans alike are absolutely horrified. Shopify, the site's host, suspends Yeezy's account within 24 hours. The site now reading, this shop is not available.
So Sidney Sumner joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter on the Sean Combs trial. Sidney, how is bringing Kanye West to the trial helping anything for the defense? Wait, he did come for the defense, right? The state didn't bring him in as an ambush, did they?
No, Nancy. Kanye answered a few reporters as he walked into the courthouse saying he was just there to support Sean Combs and his children. Kanye sat in an overflow room with Christian Combs for just a few minutes, not even an hour, to just show his support for Sean Combs, apparently. But Kanye is a huge fan of drama. He creates drama nearly everywhere he goes. So a lot of people are feeling like maybe he did this for more selfish reasons than he claimed.
Wow. Dr. Bethany Marshall, can you imagine putting your own financial interest, a pecuniary interest, before that of your longtime friend? So how does it help to bring in a Hitler sympathizer for your case. How does that help anything?
Well, I guess the saying is there's no such thing as bad publicity. I think Kanye did a flyby, meaning he just wanted to be seen walking into the courtroom, being sympathetic towards P. Diddy's son, like he's like a paternal figure of some sort, and that he's supporting P. Diddy's enterprise. I mean, who knows? In his mind, he may feel that P. Diddy is going down and he'll take over his whole market in terms of selling albums or records or whatever. So, you know, I think that we have to pick our friends carefully. I love the term frenemy, is when your friend is actually your enemy. And in this case, it's really unsure. I am unsure what Kanye West's motivations really are.
Back to Troy Slayton joining us, veteran trial lawyer out of L.A. Troy Slayton, I mean, with friends like this, why would they bring Kanye to court? A known Hitler sympathizer.
I don't think Diddy's defense team had anything to do with this. I think Kanye did this on his own because he's selling free Diddy merchandise. If I was Diddy's defense team, I'm not calling in Kanye West with his swastikas and his Heil Hitler merchandise. Absolutely not. I think Kanye did this absolutely on his own because he's trying to sell merch. He's trying to make money off all the free publicity surrounding this trial.
Troy Slayton, it cannot help Sean Combs. Not that I want him to be helped, but it can't help Sean Combs for Kanye to show up. I don't know if the jurors even realized what was happening, but it's done now. Can I ask you very quickly, Troy Slayton, I want to circle back to the chaos in the courtroom surrounding juror number six, okay? And will that be reversible error if there's a conviction? Could you explain why, whether he's black, white, purple, or green, that juror had to go?
Well, I understand why the judge dismissed him, but I also understand why it's going to be fertile ground for appeal. Because there's this little thing in this country called the Constitution. And the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment says everybody has to be treated equal. And how that applies to this trial is that you can't dismiss somebody because of their race. You can't. And so if the jurors,
Slayton,
I mean, if the prosecutor...
Slayton.
Yes, Nancy.
Hold on.
If the prosecutors,
we all
if the prosecutors got rid of him because of his color...
We all accept that a juror cannot be thrown off or thrown out of the voir dire process because of their race. Batson v. Kentucky, it's an age-old case, right? We all know that. This juror was placed on the jury. He was not deselected because of his race. But Troy, he stated he doesn't live in the jurisdiction. He can't
Maybe.
Be on the jury. You can't waive somebody.
Answers.
You can't waive that constitutional right.
They didn't even give him a chance to explain, Nancy. They kicked him out. He gave inconsistent answers. At one point, he said he lived in New Jersey. The other point, he said he lived in the Bronx. So it's not clear exactly where he lived or if he moved during the trial.
Okay, let's get some clarification very quickly. Sidney Sumner, what exactly did he say? Please school Troy Slayton.
Nancy, the judge said that the issue of race could not outweigh the fact that this juror was possibly lying or trying to stay on this panel. The juror was very unclear in whether or not he actually resided in New Jersey or if he resided in the Bronx full time. And that inconsistency led the judge to believe that this juror was not being truthful because he wanted to stay on the panel. And the juror should not be that invested in the case unless he had some kind of bias toward it. So the judge said, I'm sorry, but
what were his words exactly, Sidney? Where did he say he lived?
Well, at first, on his jury questionnaire, this juror answered that he lived in the Bronx with his aunt. Then, in casual conversation with court staff, he was talking about living in New Jersey with his girlfriend and his daughter. So when it came back again, he told the judge, no, I spend most of my time in the Bronx. So we have this constant inconsistency of, well, you said this, now you said that, now you said this again, so I don't understand what is the truth here? And at that point, he just could not be trusted.
So he gave conflicting answers about where he lived. And isn't it true, Sidney Sumner, he was given the opportunity to explain himself. He was called into questioning by the judge with the lawyers present.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. So he was given a chance to explain himself and say, you know, I just didn't think about what I was saying when I answered this jury questionnaire. And no, he tried to correct himself, making that the third inconsistent statement that he made to the court.
Okay, Troy Slayton joining me, veteran trial lawyer out of the L.A. jurisdiction. Troy, under our Constitution, at trial, you are not allowed to waive constitutional rights, such as a right to a lawyer, okay, a right to cross-examination, all of these under the Sixth Amendment. You cannot waive a jury of your peers unless you go with a bench trial. So here, even if the state had gone along with it, that the defense wanted to keep this juror, I think because he is a Sean Combs empathizer, on appeal, that is a reversible error. A new set of lawyers, as I explained at the top of our show, a new set of appellate lawyers will say, well, you can't waive the right to jurors from your jurisdiction. That's reversible on appeal. Troy?
That's why Diddy's attorneys were so upset. They thought that this person was a sympathetic, potentially juror for them. Instead of bringing, he was an African-American juror. And they're bringing in a juror, a Caucasian juror from Westchester, with much more conservative area of New York. This person was a corrections officer. The person who was dismissed was a corrections officer who said he enjoyed hip hop and rap from the early 90s and that he enjoyed
Diddy's
music. What
does that have to do with the Constitution? Nothing.
It has to do with whether or not the juror is being dismissed because of a discriminatory
He gave conflicting answers about where he lived. You cannot have jurors on your jury that do not live in the jurisdiction. It's an immediate reversal.
Just because there's a conflict doesn't mean that he was lying. Just because he said one thing to court staff, not under oath, that doesn't mean that he was lying when he was under oath during the voir dire process or when he was speaking to the court.
We remember an American hero, Trooper Frankie Williams, New Jersey State Police, just 31, killed in the line of duty, survived by grieving wife Kimberly and parents Victoria and Robert. American hero, Trooper Frankie Williams.
Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend.